of having Rocheli Franco with us. We thank Rocheli for making herself available. Also, has a tremendously busy schedule. We had a lot of siyata deshmaya that she was able to be with us today and addresses groups in Israel and around the world. And I want to say that Rocheli is first and foremost not only a wonderful human being, but an incredible Torah teacher. The issue of women's learning and high-level women's learning has been something that Rocheli has been constantly committed to and passionate about, which she speaks about both in Israel and around the world. And we thank you. We thank you for being with us. And Be'ezrat Hashem, thank you on wonderful occasions.
Hi, Shalom. I apologize for these lengthy pages. I wasn't sure if I need to have English translation or not. Looking into it, I imagine the answer was not. But it makes it ridiculously long. It's really a short daf mekor. My talk at this title, Leadership in Times of Crisis, it was an offered title. I really know nothing much about leadership in times of crisis. But as I was preparing this class, I said, well, actually, it does somehow relate. So you'll have to decide if how relevant it is in the class. Okay, it's going to look a little bit like a Shul Tanakh. Bear with me. It's not the worst thing that could happen. The Seidel. We're starting out with some of the most famous sukkim in Tanakh. They're so famous. Oh, boy. Two last apologies, and then I'll try not to apologize anymore. I was born in Israel, and thank God my parents made Aliyah before I was born, and there isn't a day that goes by that I'm not grateful for that, but you have to pay the price for my accent and lack of vocabulary when I stumble on the words. And second is, I'm just recuperating from flu. So I saw Rav Riskin here, and Rav Riskin is known to, you know, if he just landed off the plane 5 minutes before Shabbat, he'll still do a flight from one side to the other and go to 20 different bar mitzvot. And I know he looks like he's 50, but he's at least 20 years older than that. So I on the last days of a flu, I can get up and give a shiur. I'm finished with apologies. Achshav nilmad. Ha'am ha'olchim b'choshech ra'u or gadol, yoshvei be'eretz al mavet, or nogea lehim, ki yeled yulad lanu, ben nitan lanu, v'tehi ha'misra'al shichmo, v'ikra shmo pele yoetz el gibor avi'ad sar shalom, l'marbe ha'misra'u l'shalom en ketz, al kiseh David v'al mamlechto. These you know, how did these sukkim become so famous? Yeah, I'm very happy you don't know. Okay?
These are not by Christianity.
They're very heavily used by Christianity. It's one of the great bases of emunah. But the truth is, they don't only sound messianic, they actually are messianic. Look at the pasuk vav. L'marbe ha'misra, ולשלום אין קץ, על כיסא דוד ועל ממלכתו. We're talking about someone that has much authority, מרבה המשרה, causes endless peace, and he sits on the throne of דוד המלך. How do we usually call that?
משיח
בן דוד. A word about fonts. Okay, look at Pasuk Vav, something weird going on there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know it's obvious, just tell me. There's a mensafik in the middle of the word, right? Now, when we know there in Hebrew, there are mansapach, five letters that have a different, they look differently when they come at the end of the word than in the middle of the word. Actually, when we look at archaeological digs, we see that they're used interchangeably. But at some point, there's a division, and one becomes the way the letter looks in the beginning of the word, and the other becomes the way it looks in the end of the word. And in all of the Tanakh, there are only two cases, here in Yeshayahu and one in Nehemiah. In Nehemiah, it's an opposite case where a nun of the middle of the word comes in the end of the word. And when something weird like this happens, it's what we call Omer Darsheni. Okay? Look at me, what's going on here? And the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, it's number two. Limarve ha-misra u'leshalom en kitz. אמר רבי תנחום, דרש בר כפרה בציפורי. מפני מה כל מם של אמצע תיבה פתוח, וזה סתום?
Why is every mem, you know, an open mem, and this one is, has the shape of a closed mem, of the kind that comes at the end of the word?
ביקש הקדוש ברוך הוא לעשות חזקיהו משיח, וסנחריב גוג ומגוג. אמרה מידת הדין לפני הקדוש ברוך הוא, ריבונו של עולם, מה דוד מלך ישראל שאמר כמה שירות ותשבחות לפניך לא עשיתו משיח? חזקיה שעשית לו כל הניסים הללו ולא אמר שירה לפניך. תעשהו משיח? לכך נסתתם.
So the Gemara says, okay, so what's going on with this letter in the middle of the word? Why is it clogged? Why does it look like a round mem?
There's a drasha said by Bar Kapara Tzipori, it might be significant who and when is saying it. הקדוש ברוך הוא wanted to make חזקיהו משיח וסנחריב גוג ומגוג, meaning King חזקיהו was potentially משיח, and the great war with סנחריב would be what the Christians called Armageddon, the end of known history. Okay, you know, everything would be very, very terrible in Milchemet Gog and Magog, but then it would be Geula, redemption, the end of history as we know it. And that was the plan. But something happened. Okay? We'll peek, before we finish the Gemara, we'll peek at Rashi there. Rashi says, Mem shebeteivat lemarbe hamisra satum. Lechach nistam. Lomar, נסתמו הדברים שעלו במחשבה ולא נעשה. Okay? There was an idea and המם נסתם, meaning the idea was stopped, it was clogged, it wasn't accomplished. לישנה אחרינה, שביקש הקדוש ברוך הוא לסתום צרותיהן של ישראל, שביקש לעשות המשיח.
And that of course didn't happen either. So here the font represents the possible end of all troubles. Okay? This mem, this shape of the mem, a closed mem, is a graphic representation of something closed, something ending. So the question is, what's ending? Okay? So this second idea said, Israel's trouble could have ended if Chizkiah would have become Mashiach.
And the third perush, Mori Rabbi Piresh, לפי שנסתם פיו של Chizkiah ולא אמר שירה.
And here again, the graphic mem is a representation of Chizkiah's mouth that stayed shut. Okay? Stayed shut instead of what? Stayed shut instead of saying Shira. So I'm going back to the Gemara and reading. David Melech Yisrael said all of Tehillim, and you didn't make him Mashiach. Chizkiah, that had all these miracles happen to him and didn't say Shira, he'll become Mashiach? So the idea was shagoh, okay? Ad kan ha-gemara v'sanhedrin. What's the story of Chizkiah? I'm sure, you know, many of you know the full story, but let's go, you know, tiyun katzav le-sefer Yishayahu, okay? Let's refresh our memory. The prophet Yishayahu, he speaks in the time of, I think, four melachim. Achaz, Achaz, Yotam, Chizkiyahu, Uziyahu, Achaz, Yotam, Chizkiyahu. Yes, okay, thanks. With each king, he has different problems. With Uziyahu, everybody's very affluent, and his major problem is Vaishmani Shurun Viv'at. He feels that people are becoming so, you know, maybe things that we know more of our times. They have most of what they need, and they feel so comfortable, and they're distancing themselves from Hashem because they don't really lack anything. Okay, so with Uziyahu, it's against becoming a materialistic society, and against people not noticing the people, the parts of society that are missing things, etc., etc. Then, about Yotam, we don't hear much, but in the time of Ahaz, Yeshayahu gets into great conflicts with Ahaz, because he has this idea that people shouldn't really try to, interfere in history. I'm putting it very extreme. But Yeshayahu has this basic belief that, if you leave people alone, they're good enough, they'll manage. And Hashem will rule the world and people will behave properly, more or less. And you have to stay out of politics, because any interference with between the big kingdoms, Aram and Sennacherib and Egypt and everything that's going on there, it's not the way really the world has to run, Actually, when we try to imagine the way Yeshayahu would run the world, it sounds like an anarchy. But you could see in many places that's his major issue with Ahaz. He says, stay out of it. And Ahaz has a big dilemma. He can either join forces with some of the enemies or rebel against others. It's the whole Ahaz, Aram, Egypt, not Ahaz, Sennacherib, in Assyria and Aram and Egypt, a very complicated political situation. I won't go into it right now. But he has the choice to keep quiet, to rebel, or to surrender. Okay? Yeshayahu begs him to stay out of politics. Eventually, Ahaz decides to surrender to Assyria. And he travels up north. And on the way, he goes through Damascus and he sees the last word in Mizbachot Avodah Zarah. And he has his people, graph out the whole shape of those Mizbachot and send them back home to Uriah HaKohen in Jerusalem and tells him, build such a Mizbech in Yerushalayim. And he goes on, and eventually, when he comes back to Yerushalayim is full of Avodah Zarah. At some point, it takes stages, but at some point, he actually locks up Beit HaMikdash. And this, in the eyes of Yeshayahu, is great darkness. It's a nightmare. A pasuk says, Ha'am ha'olchim b'choshech. Okay, what choshech? Apparently the choshech of this time in Yerushalayim, where there's Avodah Zarah in every corner, where there's a major mizbeach Avodah Zarah in the center of the city, where Beit HaMikdash is locked down. But ha'am ha'olchim b'choshech ra'u or gadol. What's the or gadol? So apparently, something interesting is going on. Under Ahaz's nose, the sun of Ahaz, Chizkiyahu, is raised on the lap of the prophet Yeshayahu and gets his whole education and his ideals and ideology from Yeshayahu. And this statement, Ha'am olchim b'choshech ra'u or gadol, ki yeled yulad lanu, ben nitan lanu, this is all understood to speak about Chizkiyahu. In the dark times of Ahaz, in Ahaz's courtyard, Chizkiyahu is growing up, and Chizkiyahu, he's going to be a great light. Eventually, Ahaz dies, and Chizkiyahu takes over. The few acts that Chazal discuss, that Chizkiyahu did regarding things that existed in the time of Ahaz, some of the things they gave blessing to, some they didn't. He starts out by giving Ahaz a poor man's funeral. You would expect the king dying to get this, great funeral. The funeral he gets is gorer oto al mita shel chavalim, which is a statement that says the time of Ahaz is gone. That's beyond us. Now starts a new era. I'm Chizkiyahu. I'm starting anew. He also does a series of other things. I'll just bring some examples from Chazal. He even in the most righteous kings, even Shlomo HaMelech, even already at the time of Mikdash, there was still gamot all over the country. What are gamot?
Like a personal on his ass.
It's an altar. It could be personal, I don't know. It could be a city altar. But it's away from the Mikdash. What kind of worship goes on there? So it's Avodat Hashem, it's not Avodah Zarah. Okay, that's something to remember. Bamot were always Avodat Hashem, they weren't Avodah Zarah. And as long as there was no Bet Mikdash, they were actually allowed. Once there was a Bet Mikdash in Yerushalayim, the Bamot were not allowed, but they represented such a great need to the people that even the most righteous kings didn't cancel them, didn't break the Bamot. And Yishayah, Chizkiyahu, probably in the spirit of Yishayah that wants no mediators between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the people, he goes ahead and he breaks the bamot. There are actually at least two places in Arad and in Tel Sheva in Israel where there are mizbachot from the time of Chizkiyahu, archaeological digs from, you know, the whole site is from the time of Chizkiyahu, and you find there an area like a warehouse, like a gniza, where a broken mizbech was put away. You know, usually when stones are broken in archaeology, they are used for secondary and et cetera uses. You find them, you know, something that was a home becomes they're used over and over again. But here, these are altars that weren't used for Avodah Zarah. They were used for Avodat Hashem. They were put in Gniza in these sites from the time of Chizkiyahu. We can find at least two sites like that to this day. Actually, very exciting. But other things he did in that spirit of not wanting any metavchim, any mediaries. One is Gnaz Sefer Refuah. Do you know anything about Sefer Refuah? Sefer Refuah, yeah. Right, so that was the medicine of the time, okay, and it's usually understood to be their own modern day medicine, you know, the height of the medicine that's reached at their time, and why would Chizkiyahu go against it? Probably because in Yishayahu's Yishayahu's vision, you should not seek help by a doctor. You should, you know, if you're sick, you should pray, you should do tshuva u'masim tovim. But what, and actually there's sects like that to this day, that refuse a lot of medical treatment, definitely, right, you know, such, definitely operations and, yeah. But of course the Rambam, being a doctor himself, can't stand this idea and says, how silly could you be, you know? If a person is hungry and they harvest wheat and they create bread from it, so you say that a person is chasar bitachon, yeah, that he doesn't trust Hashem to take care of his hunger. No, he thanks Hashem for the wheat. He thanks Hashem for the wisdom to make bread, and he eats because that's what it's all about, right? He says it's the same thing with medicine. You thank Hashem for the medicine. You thank Hashem for the wisdom of the doctors. And you try to heal yourself. So in the eyes of the Rambam, it can't be that Chizkiyahu put away a book of real medicines. And he says, no, those were folklore medicines. Nobody wanted them to be available. He put them away because you know, it was a bad idea. So that's a... And let's see, another example of what he did. For instance, if I remember, I'll tell you. Oh, I know. Katak nachash nechoshet. He takes, there's actually, in a way, it's a souvenir from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, from the time of the Midbar. There's a nachash nechoshet, right? And nobody ever worshipped it as a Avodah Zarah, or there was no problem with it all these generations. But at this point, maybe when everybody was worshipping Avodah Zarah all over, people were relating to Nechash and Nechoshet also as some kind of fetish. Can you define fetish to me? Any object that you relate to as having
mystical forces or forces beyond its objectivity. Once you make that of an object, it grows beyond its size. Hence the use of fetish in other areas of life. Specifically here, again, something that could have been totally innocent and was innocent for many generations, Chizkiyahu decides to destroy it. Okay, this is from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, because like Yeshayahu told him, he wants nothing between him and the Kadosh Baruch Hu, between the people and the Kadosh Baruch Hu. You want to worship? Worship directly. Bekitzel, this is the story of Chizkiyahu taking over for Ahaz, and he, after a while, has to deal with the politics too. That creates a problem for Yeshayahu. It seems like if we would go into Yeshayahu's mind, Yeshayahu is afraid that he's going into this whole process again like he was with the Ahaz. Now Chizkiyahu is going to start speaking to Aram and speaking to Egypt and speaking to Ashur, and who knows what's going to happen. Sennacherib, that's there for Ashur, starts Masa Milchama, English. He starts his war towards Eretz Yisrael, towards Yehuda. Yisrael is already destroyed, I think, for about 14 years, the Mamlechet Yisrael. Now he comes towards Mamlechet Yehuda, and... Am I doing this? And it's not a Twitter generation or Instagram. Sorry for these examples. It takes him 3.5 years to reach Eretz Yisrael and to go through with his plans. So while he is on his way, and you know there are letters and there are reports that he's coming close, Chizkiyahu is preparing Yerushalayim for war. What, for example?
He's what?
He fortifies the wall. Another thing? You're all in it. The Shiloh, right? He expects the siege, right? So classically what happens in the siege is the source of water is, if it's outside the walls, it gives water to the enemy and you have nothing inside the city. So what he does in the Shiloh, do you know what I'm talking about? Where you all in the Shiloh? That tunnel that goes and you walk in the water? He digs this for years, where he, hides the water source from the enemy that's about to create the siege, and he also makes sure that the water gets into the people so they can last for a long time under a siege in Yerushalayim. Eventually, Sennacherib comes to Yehuda, and he burns one city after the other. And this we know both from the reports in the Tanakh and from outer reports from the Divrei Yamim of Assyria. Okay? And there he describes how city after city gets burned. And when it comes to Yerushalayim, he says, "And Chizkiyahu I caught like a bird in a cage." Okay? Now why that? Every city before that was burnt. So we read here in number 4. Just before we read, we get to this dramatic point where the siege is going on for a very, very long time, and they're getting to the breaking point, and Yeshayahu rejoins Chizkiyahu, and they pray and pray and pray and pray and pray and pray and pray, and then they go to sleep, which is quite amazing. You know, what Kook says about Akedat Yitzchak, it says, Vayeshkem Avram Baboker, so everybody learns how he's Zariz LeMitzvot, he wakes up early. If nobody notices, he actually slept that night. So here, they wake up in the morning and the Tzukim say this, Vayetzim Malach, Vayakev HaMachane Ashur, 185,000, Vayashkimu Baboker, Vine Kulam, Bugarim Metim. They wake up in the morning and they are 185,000 dead Assyrian soldiers around the walls. Okay? Now, in our reports from, historical reports from outside the Tanakh, there are reports of this occasion, and they say it was plague, was bivah. Nope. I don't care what the shape of Malach Hashem is, yeah? It's plague or not plague, Malach that comes with a sword. Rabbeinu Shluchim, I used to have a t-shirt that says, Vayomer Elokim, MC Baribua, MC squared, all these equations, Vayhi O. Know this shirt? I get it in the Arab market. Someone was saying, how can you wear something like that? It's a tefillah, heresy. It's just a description of the same thing, right? It doesn't matter if the pasuk says Malach Hashem and the Sefer Titiyahu says play. So the idea is there. So they wake up in the morning, and in the time that was supposed to be so dramatic and critical, they've been waiting for years, and they look over the walls, and you can imagine the quiet, the silence, and they see 185,000 soldiers that were about to burn this city like they burnt every city in Yehuda. They're all dead. At this point, Chizkiyahu was expected Lomar Shira. Okay? How would you translate Lomar Shira? To praise, okay? Any other words you do?
I need to say Allah.
Good question. No, Abseder, this is something we'll deal with in a minute. I'm just turning to you. Why would Chizkiyahu, that was righteous his whole life and was praying so hard, finally get to this point and not say Shira? Okay, question again. We apparently have great ta'anot to Chizkiyahu. How can he get to such a critical time, such an amazing miracle, and somehow stay silent, not say what everybody is expecting of him, not say Shira? Do you have any ideas why not? Come on. Yalla, Mashu. Ken.
Maybe they want to, as it would seem that maybe it's only shown because of the days when a supernatural miracle occurs. Perhaps it's such a big miracle, you can show that Abba now is saying Shira, that perhaps it's only in the situation. It's not like a day-to-day occurrences.
I understand the concept of, when only something super, super special happened, but then... So what? You don't say thanks when something super, super special happens just because you haven't been saying it so far? Or, maybe something that could be hiding under that statement is maybe he's not the kind of guy that says Shira. Maybe he doesn't have the talent for it. But actually, at some point of his life, he becomes critically ill. And in Perek Lamed, he says a beautiful Shira after he's cured. So he has it in him. So apparently, maybe that's not the problem. Yes?
Yeah. It's not becoming to sing praise when people are lying dead. It's just a little awkward.
So you're saying, Ma'aseh yaday tov'im bayam v'atem omrim shira? After all, these are God's creatures. We won't go into the argument if the original statement, Ma'aseh yaday tov'im bayam, is about Israel, about the goyim, lo chashuv. But you're standing in front of so much death. Even if you're saved personally, how can you start singing? Okay. Odd? Yeah.
Maybe the difference between Shira and Halel is that the Shira is the spontaneous and the problem was that Avodat Hashem was very overly matun and formalistic and he would be able to the next year have a song on that day and have a very specific real stuff, but he wasn't able to bring in that like the David, like spontaneous emotional element to
the. So in a minute we'll say this whole issue about Hallel and Shira that came up here as a translation, but you're bringing up a point of personality. Maybe it's what in Israel we call a dos, yeah, and he knows how to read what's written in the Siddur. His ways of worshiping are very very mesudar. He's not a spontaneous kind of God. It's a little conflict with the fact that he's able to find it in him to say Shira when he recuperates from sickness.
Maybe he learned his lesson later.
Maybe he did. Okay, any else? Ken? You're saying in many ways this Gula is very partial. Because it's, first of all of the citizens of Yehuda were burnt, right? So, okay, he was saved, but still so many people were. And Moglechet Israel is still destroyed. And this conflict is not over yet. You know, Sancherib is not just disappearing.
When you know everything is over.
And he maybe feels he has to wait for the complete Gula in order to. Okay, Beseda. Let me ask something beyond that. People feel so strongly about this issue of not saying Shira because basically what does it represent? Ingratitude, right? So I'll ask a very basic, almost banal question. Why do we feel it's so essential for people to feel gratitude? Why do we try to raise people, young children, you know, not only to say, you know, thank you and please because people will treat them nicely, but in a deep sense, why do we care so much about a person being able to feel gratitude? Yeah.
It's so tied into like being people of God. Like you can't. It means you're not self-sufficient. If you have the capacity to say thank you, then it means you're not. You're relying on other people and other things.
The minute you're able to acknowledge that you're receiving, you acknowledge your dependence, and you're not an island here, yeah? Okay.
I guess like in a smaller way, like it just brings people together and like it creates this like unity and it makes a nicer, warmer society.
It makes communication amongst people more. What?
Like warm and
warm and personable. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But to build on that, modern psychology teaches that when people feel gratitude, they feel happier. And it's partially because you feel more connected to others and you realize that you're not alone and that you have a network helping you.
Right. So taking all of your things together, and you know what, you said modern psychology, so I'll say positive psychology, Jewish psychology, there are many names to that. One of the basic, exercises that people get is make a list of everything that you feel gratitude about, that you can thank for. And people say, they write down something and they say, but, you know, there are things to correct, there are things that could be better, there are things that... And they say, no, we'll have a separate list for the buts. Now just write one after the other all the things that you can feel gratitude for. And what it creates is, first of all, a feeling of being blessed. You know, people actually start writing things down and they acknowledge that, wow, I have so much to be thankful for. Somehow, if we don't go through the process of thanking, we sometimes miss our blessing. Okay? We miss, when we don't stop for a minute to acknowledge the good, we sometimes don't even recognize it in our lives. And beyond that, you eventually realize that their blessing comes from someone. If it's something you got from a person, you acknowledge the person that bestowed this upon you. And when there are things that are, you know, divine, so you both realize your dependency and your blessings, and the fact that there's someone that blesses you, there's someone that bestows all of this upon you. It as a side effect, it also, once you feel blessed, you have more ability to share with others. Once you feel that it's not from you, you didn't create it, it's kind of transfers through you also have more of an ability to share. It doesn't, you know, it's not yours. And in general, gratitude here is a basic human experience, a positive human experience. And when Chizkiyahu looks like he's lacking it, that is a very, very disappointing fact. Disappointing enough that a person that could have been Mashiach, somehow the plan gets stuck. Okay. Yeah.
Maybe because everything was so passive, that when you're receiving, that's a passive process, but when you're being active, that's when you're able to do things. That's when you're, because it was so passive, he wasn't able to.
It's interesting, and it could be that gratitude and showing gratitude is our active part, even when we're passively receiving things. Okay, you know, we could passively receive and take everything for granted, or we could bother to acknowledge and pay gratitude, which puts us in a more active mode. Yeah.
Do you think that like that way? Like yes, gratitude is active, but it's also like when you want something. When you really want something, you're going to be grateful when you get it. So, do you think it was a matter of, like, that he wasn't active in that way, and therefore, like, he didn't want it enough to be grateful when you...
I'm not sure. I mean, we can speak a lot about that equation, because there's so much to be grateful for that we never bothered to want, because we took for granted. And, but here someone take it away from us, you know?
But, like, when you really, really want something, you will...
Yes. Here by Chizkiyahu, I'm sure he was desperate. So
you'll be more grateful now.
Some side points, okay? In Pesachim, it says in number 5, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Shir shebatorah Moshe v'Yisrael Amoru b'Shah Shalom min Hayam, V'Halel Zeh Mi'Amaro, Nevi'im Shebeneh Tiknu Lehem Yisrael, Sheyu Omrim Oto Al Kol Perek V'Perek, Al Kol Tzara Shelo Tavoh Aleh, Lichshenigalim Omrim Oto Al Geulatam, and then there are many examples. And one of them is Chizkiyahu v'siyatomu, b'sha she'amad alem sancharim. And we say, what? Chizkiyahu said Shira or didn't say Shira? And before you said about the difference between Halel and Shira, so we either say that Sanhedrin and Pesachim don't agree with each other, or we say maybe there's a difference between Halel and Shira, and we don't have much time for it, but maybe the difference is what you offered. That Shira is a spontaneous, you know, kind of a Avodat Hashem, and Halel is, you know, what's in the Siddur. And if it's true that Chizkiyahu was more, you know, the kind that says the Brakim Lefi HaSeder, it could work with what, if you peek at number 7, what Yishayahu says, V'omer Adonai Yan, ki nigash ha'am ze b'fiv u'b'sfatav, ki ibnu li v'libor achak mimeni, v'tir at'am moti mitzvat anashim melumadat. This expression, mitzvat anashim melumada, to this day, means when people do things by the book, without the heart and soul, and really, they just do it because that's the thing to do. So that might be what the difference between halal and shira is, but we won't go there. I skipped, but there's a very interesting Chatam Sofer that's in the source before that says, in essence, Chatam Sofer says that saying Halel on Yom Kippur, Yom Ha'atzmaut ve'Yom Yerushalayim is De'oraita. I'm not sure politically you would agree, but you get a chance to peek at it later. What do I want from this? When people go through their gratitude lists, one of the things that they tend to overlook is the things that they take for granted. They you know, a child growing up in the state of Israel will probably not put in his list growing up in a sovereign Jewish country. You know, a person having a roof over their head, and people take things for granted. And in order to thicken your list, what usually helps is perspective. And what is very effective is historic perspective. I have many examples and perspectives here, but you know, even in Leila Seder, we start with Mitchila of the Avodah Zarah of Avotayim. So we really, really understand the ness of Yetziat Mitzrayim. We start from Arami Oved Avi, because you know, only when you put the whole story in perspective, you can understand the great miracle. The true perspective for us is the Pesukim from Yechezkel, number 10. ואומר אליי בן אדם, העצמות האלה כל בית ישראל הם, הנה אומרים יבשו עצמותינו ועבדה תקוותינו ונגזרנו לנו. לכן ינבא ואמרת עליהם, כה אמר אדוני אלוהים, הנה אני פותח את קברותיכם והעליתי אתכם מקברותיכם עמי והבאתי אתכם על אדמת ישראל. וידעתם כי אני אדוני בפתחי את קברותיכם ועלותי אתכם מקברותיכם עמי. ונתתי רוחי בכם וחייתם והנחתי אתכם על אדמתכם. וידעתם כי אני אדוני דיברתי ועשיתי נאום אדוני. I think there were never times in history where there were piles of dry bones like in Europe not so many decades ago and smoking ashes that said there's no hope for us, nobody's going to remember there were ever Jews on this planet, nobody's going to tell our story. And I really usually avoid mentioning, you know, Holocaust everywhere, but if we want to feel our full gratitude list, we need historical perspective. We need to be able to look at our existence here and to say Shira. When there's a story about Rabbi David Milelov that slept in some place, and there was a big clock in the living room, and he couldn't sleep all night because of this clock. And in the morning, he went to ask his host, tell me, what's the story with this clock? And the man said, oh, we're very proud of this clock. My wife is Mezrich, I think. It's an inheritance from one of the great Hasidic scholars. And then Rabbi David Milelov says, oh, now I understand. Baruch Haba. Every clock I hear to this day, it ticks. You're 1 second closer to your death. Yes, 1 second closer to your death. And this clock was all night was clicking. You're 1 second closer to Geula. You're 1 second closer to Geula. Now, what do I want to say here? The idea is that every era has potential Geula and potential Mashiach. Okay. The question is, do you identify the potential? Because when potential is not identified, the chance goes by, and it's not realized. We're all in a Judaism that's post-Shabtaut, and we're always very wary of messianic ideas. But when Hashem serves us potential geula, we should at least have our gratitude list and the ability to say shira for it. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says that here in says אמר רבי אבא אין לך קץ מגולה מזה שאני אמר ואתם הרי ישראל אנתכם תתנו ופריכם תישאו לעמי ישראל. It means when I often find myself saying this, but it's really something I totally feel, okay? When I open the windows in my home and I see the lemons and the shesek and the clementina all giving lots and lots of fruit, I think of this Gemara that says, when Am Yisrael goes back to Eretz Yisrael, the trees respond to it. The branches become full of fruit, and that's אין לך קץ מגולה מזה. That's סימן לגאולה. Okay? Now, I come from a home where when people say, מדינת ישראל ראשית צמיחת גאולתנו, that the state of Israel is the beginning of our גאולה, my father says, הלוואי. Okay? Meaning, nobody promised us. It could easily go wrong. Okay? It's a siman geula. It's potential geula. Eretz Yisrael is responding to us, but it's not in our pocket. Okay? There were many generations that had a chance. It's all about recognizing, about being able to say Shira about it, feeling the deep gratitude, and of course, the next sentence in the Gemara. The next sentence says, Amar Ola, En Yerushalayim Nifdet, Ela Bitzdaka, Shenemar Tzion Bemishpat Yipadet, Beshavea Bitzdaka. There's a lot of work to be done. Okay, even the Pesukim we started with, the next Pesuk says, להכין אותה ולסעדה במשפט ובצדקה מעתה ועד עולם, קנאת השם צבאות תעשה זאת. There's a story, last story, about חפץ חיים asking a person, how do you do? In Yiddish it's, "Vus machste." Okay? Now literally, it means, what do you do? Okay? So he asks, "Vus machste?" And the guy says, "Oh, Baruch Hashem, I'm feeling fine." And Chafetz Chaim asks again, "Vus machste?" He says, "Oh, and my family's fine, and the children are fine. Vus machste? Oh, and Parnassah is fine." And then Chafetz Chaim gets upset and says, "You keep on telling me what Hashem has done to you. I'm asking you, what do you do?" Okay? So, I call this shiur a new song of gratitude. Okay? It starts with recognizing potential and, you know, recruiting all of ourselves to working towards its realization. ונודה לך שיר חדש על גאולתנו ועל עבדות נפשנו. תודה.
Thank you very much, Racheli. Two quick comments before we break for lunch. One is, during lunch break, which will go for half an hour now until 1:30, there's a book sale, a Pomeranz book sale with reduced prices right here in the hallway.